Hello and welcome. Today is Wednesday, January 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the White House continues to make unsubstantiated claims about the election.
I think he stated his concerns of voter fraud and people voting illegally during the campaign.
President Trump pushes forward with the construction of controversial oil pipelines. The administration will welcome its first visit from a foreign leader this week. A photo tour of New York City's hidden gems. And the Oscar nominations are in, and we've got details. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, one day after the new president rehashed the November election at a reception for congressional leaders and repeated the claim that 3 to 5 million immigrants in the country illegally voted for his opponent, Hillary Clinton, White House spokesman Sean Spicer told reporters Tuesday that President Donald Trump continues to believe that voting by millions of undocumented immigrants cost him a victory in the national popular vote.
I think he stated his concerns of voter fraud and people voting illegally during the campaign, and he continues to maintain that belief based on studies and evidence that people have presented to him.
While he was pressed by reporters, Spicer offered no evidence of fraud. Trump moved Tuesday to advance construction of two oil pipelines in the U.S. heartland, his latest actions to overturn the policies of former President Barack Obama, who he replaced last week. Trump signed executive orders calling for new negotiations to allow construction of the Keystone XL pipeline, which is designed to carry Canadian oil sands crude through the U.S. to refineries near the Gulf of Mexico, and the Dakota Access Pipeline, sending oil from the state of North Dakota south of Illinois.
This is with regard to the construction of the Keystone Pipeline, something that's been in dispute, and it's subject to a renegotiation of terms by us. We're going to renegotiate some of the terms, and if they'd like, we'll see if we can get that pipeline built. A lot of jobs, 28,000 jobs. Great construction jobs.
Well, after a lengthy review, President Obama rejected the Keystone Project in 2015 on environmental grounds. Late last year, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers also blocked the Dakota Access Project and said it would look for an alternative route after the Standing Rock Sioux Indian Tribe and its supporters contended that the project would threaten its drinking water and Native American cultural sites. Let's talk more about these pipeline issues with Dr. John Abraham, professor of thermal sciences at the University of St. Thomas in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for being with us, Doctor. What's your reaction to the president's actions?
We are at a pivotal point in our country in that there is a huge emerging economy that can revolutionize our economy here in the United States and the economies abroad, and that is the renewable energy sector. If you look at wind and solar power as examples, their prices have dropped tremendously over the past 30 years, and they're now competitive with traditional fossil fuels. And countries are racing to be the leader in those areas. They're racing to export their technology. That's where the monies and jobs are going to be in the future. And what these decisions today have done is they've actually brought us backwards economically. They're going to lock in decades of infrastructure that is going to be used to transport the dirtiest of the dirty fossil fuels. I mean, you described the Keystone Pipeline as an oil pipeline. It's really not. It's a tar sands pipeline. So this is the dirtiest possible fuel that you can have, and we're going to be locking ourselves into extracting more of it than we need to. So there's economic consequences, and there's environmental consequences, and the United States economy and environment is going to suffer because of this.
Well, you mentioned jobs. The president said that this Keystone project would create, quote, lots of jobs, 28,000 jobs.
The Keystone Pipeline is a very expensive pipeline that will involve or require a number of short-term construction working positions. But the key about pipelines is once you build them, you don't need people to operate them. And in fact, the number of full-time jobs will be 50 jobs, perhaps even less than that. So in terms of a dollar of construction per job, this is a terrible investment.
And what's your take on the other pipeline as far as that goes? Native Americans were concerned that it was on sacred burial grounds. They were concerned about what it would do to their water, their drinking water. What is your view on that?
When we talk about pollution concerns and energy concerns, we really have two primary concerns. That is, will there be a pollution outbreak at the point of use? So that means, could there be a spill along the pipeline? Could something rupture? Think of the Gulf oil spill a few years ago. That's a great example of a pollution disaster that occurred at a spot. And we get oil spills all the time and train derailment. The other environmental concern that we're concerned about is climate change, which is a global phenomenon. And most of the attention for the Dakota Access Pipeline has been focused on the first of those, that is a local spill. What's going to happen if there's a local spill? Now, this stuff doesn't just spill out on the ground. What the real concern is, the plan is to put it deep underground underneath some waterways. And if there is a rupture under the waterways, it could contaminate large areas of water. And so there's a real specific concern about that area and how many people downstream would be affected by a spill. And as a climate scientist, which is my position, we also have a concern about the long-term effects on the climate. So there are these pollution concerns. There's two different ones that are interacting. And then, of course, there's just the economics concern that this is just bad economics.
And finally, the Trump administration also instituted what was described as a temporary media blackout at the Environmental Protection Agency and then barred staff from awarding any new contracts or grants, part of a broader communications clampdown within the executive branch. Yeah. Do you know anything about this?
I do. So oftentimes when a new administration comes in, they will try to redirect the focus of different organizations to meet their goals. And sometimes they'll do this. They'll say, let's stop spending on new projects until we reprioritize. But what's interesting about this is there appears to be a virtual gag order so that people aren't allowed to talk about it. And there's this enormous clampdown on spending on any new projects or even using outside contractors for projects and on grants. I would say it's an extraordinary clampdown on the Environmental Protection Agency, and I think what's unique about this, the thoroughness of this clampdown, and it's a clampdown both in the ability to talk about what's going on, but also the ability to award contracts and grants, and the ability to go outside the organization to get things done. Oftentimes in the past, you could go hire a contractor to get a project done, but this is really just a clampdown and a blackout. And it's not just the EPA, which deals with things like pollution spills and air pollution, water pollution. It's also the USDA. So I would say that it would be shocking if we didn't know who had been picked to lead some of these organizations in their transition. But nevertheless, it's somewhat disheartening because it puts everything on a freeze. And these are important processes that we need to get done as a country.
John Abraham, professor of thermal sciences at the University of St. Thomas in the state of Minnesota. Meanwhile, Native Americans and environmental activists are vowing legal actions over the pipeline orders. Well, joining me now for what people are talking about on social media, we are joined by G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Lori.
So what's the online reaction so far to the Trump administration reportedly barring the EPA from issuing public grants and media updates?
Lori, as you can imagine, this is a top trending topic on Twitter in the United States at this hour. And ProPublica tweeted a link to their article about the development. The tweet reads, "Scoop, Trump administration has ordered freeze to EPA contracts and grants, could affect wide swath of work."
Wow. So what's the hashtag we should use to learn more about this?
Either EPA or EPA freeze. You can also check out the agency's Twitter account at EPA, but the last tweet is from January 19th.
Wow. Okay. So what else is happening?
Dipping dots.
What?
So here's a question for you. Is it the ice cream of the future or no?
I don't know. I've never heard of it.
You haven't? It's a little frozen treats that are in little droplets, but frozen. It's ice cream.
Okay.
Well, that's the company's slogan. And Press Secretary Sean Spicer has been fighting a battle with a frozen treat maker for a very long time. Back in 2010, he tweeted, "Dipping Dots is not the ice cream of the future." And a year later, he tweeted the same, only this time he prefaced it by saying, "I think I've said this before." Now, just 2 years ago, he got back at it and tweeted, "If Dippin' Dots was truly the ice cream of the future, they would not have run out of vanilla at the National Stadium."
Well, that's probably why it was so good. Everybody bought it.
That's true. Everyone wanted the Dippin' Dots.
Right.
But this week, the company finally got back to him and tweeted, "At Sean Spicer, let's connect the dots. We hope you and the White House take us up on our ice cream social invite."
Wow. Okay. Well, that's quite an end to the saga. What else is trending?
Giant otters. But sadly, they're not around anymore. Scientists have found fossils of otters the size of wolves in China dating back about 6 million years. The debate on social media is whether they would have been cute or terrifying. Lori?
All right, thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Donald Trump believes massive voter fraud in the election cost him the popular vote. U.S. museums, libraries collect signs from the women's protests. Donald Trump narrows the high court search and vows to name a conservative next week. China warns the U.S. has sovereignty over the South China Sea. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues Friday. British Prime Minister Theresa May will become the first world leader to visit the new president. The U.S. leader has promised an even closer relationship between the two historic allies. May has called Trump's past remarks about women unacceptable, but says she's ready to focus on the bigger issues of trade and security when she sits down with the American president. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez reports from London.
The biggest rallies against President Trump's inauguration outside the United States have been led by feminists in Britain, still angry over campaign revelations of controversial remarks about women. But it is the future of trade in the post-Brexit era, terrorism, and the conflict with Syria that tops Theresa May's agenda with Trump.
I will be talking to Donald Trump about the issues that we share, about how we can build on this special relationship. It's the special relationship that also enables us to say when we do find things unacceptable.
May says she won't be afraid to challenge him.
I think the biggest statement that will be made about the role of women is the fact that I will be there as a female prime minister, prime minister of the United Kingdom, talking to him, directly talking to him about the interests that we share.
Some observers predict that could be an awkward moment between two people with very different personalities.
I would think for somebody of Theresa May's background, the way she comports herself, the way that she's lived her life, to confront Donald Trump is going to be moving into meeting somebody from a very different world. Not quite a different planet, but certainly a different world.
But for both Trump and May, the common interests and the historic special relationship between the two nations are much higher than any potential personality and gender issues that the media in both countries have raised. May recently presented her plan for Britain's departure from the European Union, an exit Trump supports. May scoring the first sit-down with a new U.S. leader bolsters her position at home. Government sources here say what she wants now is a free trade deal that cuts tariffs. Warnings from Trump's predecessor that Britain would go to the back of the queue on trade deals now seems a distant memory. Theresa May has made it to the front of the line. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, London.
And you're listening to International Edition on VOA. Well, when you think of New York, it comes to mind. What comes to mind? Well, for people in America and around the world, it's Manhattan, the place of Times Square, Radio City Music Hall, Fifth Avenue, Broadway, the Empire State Building. But a new project takes a photographic journey to 100 of Manhattan's side streets to highlight many homegrown businesses tucked away in unexpected places. Joining me now from New York is one of the project's photographers, Tom Arena. Thanks for being with us. Tell us about the project.
We're trying to bring attention to small mom-and-pop side street businesses all throughout Manhattan. And the project covers First Street to 155th Street in Manhattan.
Tell us more specifically what the project is and how you're going about bringing attention to those side streets.
We walk every single street from river to river, East River to Hudson. We introduce ourselves to the business owners, and we really try to delve deep into why they started their business, how they started their business, what are the challenges of owning a small business, and really try to create an encyclopedia of these businesses that have existed for anywhere from a few days to 150 years. And we've seen the whole gamut of businesses.
So you're doing 100 streets in Manhattan through the eye of your camera lens.
Absolutely.
It sounds fascinating. What kind of pictures and stories are people seeing?
One of my most favorite places is a place called Jim's Shoe Repair, which is on East 59th Street, and it was founded in 1932. And he's a cobbler. He makes shoes. And you walk in, and you just instantly are transported back into the 30s. You know, they have the wooden stalls for men getting their shoes shined. And then you walk behind the counter, and it feels like you're in Santa's workshop. There's just people doing every little thing all by hand, all with their big, thick glasses on. Some of them have been working there for 30, 40 years. And it's right between a Duane Reade and a Starbucks, and you would never know that it was there. But a lot of people in Manhattan, they know their block, but they don't know what's one block up or one block below where they live. It's so fascinating to explore.
And if you were talking to someone who had never been to New York and you wanted to take them through what this project would show, how would you sum it up?
It's all about the soul of Manhattan and trying to underscore what makes New York so special. Every major city in the country has Michelin star restaurants or, you know, big department stores, but it's all these brave sort of entrepreneurs that are starting these businesses, and it's very scary to open up a small business and you have no idea what to expect. But that's what made Manhattan so great, is that people have these big ideas, and people still have these big ideas, and they're starting even now. There's always something new to see in Manhattan.
All right. Photographer with the New York Side Streets Project, Tom Arena, thanks so much for being with us. You're listening to VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
VOA's International Edition continues now. U.S. President Donald Trump says he'll announce his choice to fill the vacancy on the U.S. Supreme Court next week. VOA's Jeff Custer reports.
During an executive order signing ceremony in his White House office Tuesday, Trump said he is meeting with congressional leaders to discuss his Supreme Court candidate options.
We'll be announcing next week. We have outstanding candidates, and we'll pick a truly great Supreme Court justice. But I'll be announcing it sometime next week.
Since Justice Antonin Scalia died last year, the Supreme Court has had only 8 justices. Former President Barack Obama nominated a replacement, but Republicans in the Senate refused to bring the choice up for a vote. During his campaign, Trump publicly identified nearly 24 candidates for the vacancy. Jeff Custer, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The American Heart Association describes heart failure as a weakening of the heart muscle and the inability to pump strongly enough to meet a body's need for blood and oxygen. According to the European Society of Cardiology, about 26 million people throughout the world have heart failure. While it currently cannot be cured, heart failure can be treated and managed. Now, researchers at Harvard University and Boston Children's Hospital have come up with a soft robot sleeve that fits around the heart and helps it beat, offering those with heart failure a new treatment option. The Harvard researchers say that their soft robotic sleeve doesn't come into contact with blood, unlike other devices currently available that help the heart to function. This is something they say decreases the risk of complications such as clotting. I'm VOA's Rick Bantaleo.
Well, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences announced nominations Tuesday for the 89th Annual Academy Awards, including 9 films in the Best Picture category.
Arrival.
Fences.
Hacksaw Ridge.
Hell or High Water.
Hidden Figures.
La La Land.
Lion.
Manchester by the Sea.
Moonlight.
Well, joining me now for detail, someone who has seen all the big nominated movies, Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard. Hey, Jeff, tell us about the awards and the nominations.
The 89th Academy Awards, which is going to be on February 26th on ABC, hosted by Jimmy Kimmel, who, believe it or not, I went to high school with my senior year. He sat next to me in Spanish, too. So
was he funny then?
Yeah, he was. He was a whole Miami Vice kind of thing going on. This was like 1983. You know, so I saw Jimmy on the red carpet for Lilo and Stitch in Hollywood at the El Capitan Theater right before he started his talk show. So I've only seen him once since we got out of high school. But, yeah, he's a Las Vegan just like me.
Very cool. Okay, so tell us more.
La La Land, which has been the darling of every film critic society and the darling of, you know, all the film festivals here, got 14 nominations, including the top ones. And it ties with Titanic and All About Eve for the most nominations of all time. And remember last year, the controversy, Oscar So White, hashtag, well, not this year, 7 people of color, 20 acting nominations, Denzel Washington and Fences, along with Viola Davis, Moonlight got 6 acting and directing nominations, Lion with 6 nominations, and Hidden Figures got Best Picture. Diversity is definitely represented in this year's Oscars. Now, snubs, Deadpool, the Marvel film that made hundreds of millions of dollars. There was all kinds of rumors that Deadpool was going to get some sort of nomination, even for special effects. Totally snubbed. Amy Adams, she got snubbed for Arrival, even though it was nominated for Best Picture. Annette Bening, she was snubbed. Tom Hanks for Sully. Martin Scorsese with his movie Silence, his passionate film he's been trying to make for 40 years, didn't get anything except maybe, I think, an editing nomination. And, of course, Pixar, Disney's darling of the animation world, Finding Dory, did not get nominated. And finally, you know, back a surprise is Michael Shannon for Nocturnal Animals, and the great Mel Gibson, who seems to be a forgiven now because he got nominated for Best Director for Hacksaw Ridge. So it's going to be a really interesting Oscar night because all of these films, all of these performances really are the best of the best this year. There's nothing mediocre. I don't know how I could choose. I really couldn't.
Okay. So, well, at this point, do you have any predictions?
Well, you know, La La Land, like I said, if I'm a betting man, which I'm not, even though I live in Las Vegas, I think La La Land is the favorite to win right now because it swept the Golden Globes. It's won so many Film Critics Society awards. But also, Manchester by the Sea, you know, has won a lot of awards. And also, Moonlight. So you just watch those 3 films. But if I had to bet, I would say La La Land is the favorite. But my personal favorite is Moonlight, which was my favorite film of last year. So we'll have to see. You know, this is a year where there's not just a strong contender because they're all strong. So this is a really difficult year, but I would put my money on La La Land.
All right. Well, we always appreciate your perspective, Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews at VegasFilmCritic.com.
If you doubt the speed at which the world is changing, just take a look at the digital media. In the last 20 years, the introduction of mobile and internet technology has spawned breathtaking advances in the sharing of information and commerce. Today, an estimated 1/4 of the Earth's population uses the services of the internet. 2/3 of us now own a mobile phone. But these advances into the digital age have been met with problems. Problems like state censorship, hackers, and identity theft, to name just a few.
The Voice of America wants to know how the digital world has transformed your life. Or have they? We'd like you to tell us your story by writing or sending videos to our website, Twitter, or Facebook page. Find out more by visiting us at our webpage at voanews.com and then click on Digital Frontier. Tell your story and share it with the world through VOA's Digital Frontier.
I'm James Partey, host of Daybreak Africa. Join me every weekday mornings at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of the show through our listeners' mail segment. Just send your views to daybreakafrica@voanews.com or call us on 202-205-9942. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Welcome back to International Edition on VOA. The Minnesota judge overseeing Prince's estate has ruled that Comerica Bank and Trust will take over running that estate. In a court filing made public on Tuesday, Carver County District Judge Kevin Ide said Comerica will be named the corporate personal representative of the state, taking over duties from temporary special administrator Bremer Trust. Now, the handover will happen at the end of the month. Ide is also denying a request to appoint a co-personal representative to act as a go-between Prince's siblings and Comerica. Prince died April 21st of an accidental drug overdose. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On August 21, 2013, Syrian government forces fired rockets containing the chemical weapon sarin at two rebel-controlled areas of Ghouta, a suburb of Damascus, killing hundreds of people and injuring thousands more. Amid the global outrage that followed, and despite vehement denials of responsibility for the attack, the Syrian regime accepted the Kerry-Lavrov framework, joined the Chemical Weapons Convention, and relinquished its declared stockpiles of chemical weapons. Nobody was held accountable for the deaths and terrible injuries of thousands of Syrians in Ghouta, nor have any persons been held accountable for the chemical weapons attacks that have continued since the Ghouta incidents. The Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, United Nations Joint Investigative Mechanism, had been established by the UN Security Council to investigate incidents of already confirmed chemical weapons attacks in Syria, and mandated to make attributions for a number of confirmed or likely chemical weapons attacks. In August and October of last year, it issued reports determining that the Syrian regime, specifically the Syrian Arab Armed Forces, used chemicals as weapons against the Syrian people in three separate incidents in 2014 and 2015. For this reason, the United States government has imposed new sanctions on Syria. On January 12th, the U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Asset Control designated 18 senior officials connected to Syria's weapons of mass destruction program. The U.S. Department of State also designated the Organization for Technological Industries, or OTI, under Executive Order 13382, a sanctions authority from 2005 aimed at freezing the assets of OTI, which belongs to the Syrian Ministry of Defense, is involved in furthering Syria's WMD-capable ballistic missile program, and has been producing components for missile built by the Syrian Scientific Studies and Research Center, the key entity responsible for Syria's WMD and missile program that was previously designated in 2004. As a result of this action, all assets of these individuals and companies that are under the jurisdiction of the United States are frozen, and U.S. persons are prohibited from engaging in transactions with them. The Syrian regime's use of chemical weapons against its own people is a heinous act that violates the long-standing global norm against the production and use of chemical weapons, said Acting Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence Adam Zubin. Today's action is a critical part of the international community's effort to hold the Syrian regime accountable for violating the Chemical Weapons Convention and UN Security Council Resolution 2118.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.